C7. Number 23B.
What is always stated in the first chapter of each vertical? So I ask now about the horizontal. Where in the horizontal? Asking what is the common denominator in prayer, animal magnetism, creation, and teaching. And I think we can perhaps work from my suggestion that it is showing the proposition, that the word here is the proposition. So perhaps you write in there the proposition. Now, what does it mean? What kind of proposition? What proposition should it exemplify? Well, it naturally should exemplify the proposition of what has been stated on the index I, that we take that as our starting point, that we take that as our proposition from where we go out. That would be the word. And actually you could see it would be a proposition to take that standpoint, which is expressed in the index I. All right. So we are going out from the word read horizontally as a proposition. Namely, what is the proposition of the word vertical? It says man's oneness with God. So the proposition in prayer is that we accept as our starting point man's oneness with God. Yes? Can you see? It is as if now the word horizontally would always say to the index I take that as my proposition from which I go out and from which I lead onward. So we accept first man's oneness with God. In animal magnetism, we have the proposition that God is actually manifesting itself as man, man's oneness, God's oneness with man, so that we accept as our proposition that God's manifestation is only God good, that his relationship to us is God good. We accept as a proposition first in Christianity, where we have only one universe, we accept that there is only one universe, the universe now of ideas of the Infinite One. That's our proposition for Christianity. And our proposition for integral science is that I go out from the proposition that I am one with that science, that I am a Christian scientist, that I have gained science through my scientific attitude. That's my proposition of being integrated as a scientist. Yes? Then let's go to the Christ horizontally and see now to where leads that proposition. Is it enough to have a proposition and leave it at that point? Or is it necessary that I see that this proposition has actually a Christ in itself, that the proposition says, I can manifest myself, I can exemplify myself. And not leave it as a word, but as a Christ which says every right proposition, spiritual proposition, has within itself the power to express that proposition. And so we come to a sense of exemplification. Perhaps we could call it the Christ exemplification. Exemplification. Perhaps we also could call it the power of manifestation. I only don't like to put it that way because manifestation always has a two different aspects. There's always the aspect to manifest the right idea, but also has the sense that it manifests itself in spite of the opposite. And that is a bit of difficulty. So, perhaps as a mental note there, as a tonality, you can take it in. Let's take exemplification, which would now show how that proposition in those four chapters are being exemplified, how they manifest themselves positively. And so we would have in Atonement and Eucharist that man's oneness with God is exemplified. How? As the God-like. So that the God-like is exemplified. Or in science, theology, and medicine, there again we have that God is exemplified in his manifestation. God and manifestation are one. That the exemplification of God is in its manifestation. How is the exemplification of Christianity, where we have only one universe? What is an exemplification of only one universe? And it shows that the exemplification of one universe is one evolution. It exemplifies itself only as one evolution. And what do we see in recapitulation? How is that integral being exemplified? It's exemplified through its system. The principle of being, the one principle of being, is exemplified through its categories, through its classification, through its system, through its scientific metaphysics. Can you see? Or if we see Christianity horizontally taken, what do we see? I think what we see is there that this exemplification is bringing forth just one realm and not many realms. Just one realm, perhaps you say one realm, one universe, something like that. One realm, take one realm. What is the realm of man's oneness with God? And you have in marriage that one realm is man's oneness with God's universe. Can you see? It's a realm sense that comes in there. What do we see as one realm in the Christ? The chapter physiology. That there is only one realm, the realm where I see God, truth is omnipotent, in the realm of truth and in the realm of belief. There's only one realm we have seen there. You see, we had God is omnipotent in the realm of truth and in the realm of belief. So we have a realm. Or we come to some objections answered. What is the realm of ideas? The realm of only one universe. What is the realm of only one universe? It's a realm of the infinite reflection of ideas. There is only one infinite reflection of ideas. That's a realm, you see. And if we come to Genesis and ask now, what is the realm of the one integral being? We say, well, the realm of that one being is its own creation, is its own Genesis. That's his own universe, the creation of God. Yeah? Can you see how the realm sense comes in? By the way, did you see how I was reasoning? You go horizontally and always look what is on the top of the vertical column, on the column. Yeah. All right. Then we go to the last horizontal science. And in science, usually we get the sense of understanding. That's a note of science, understanding. Did we actually get the sense of understanding in the chapter on spiritualism? And an understanding of what? The oneness is man is one with God. Therefore, understanding shows that man's spiritual understanding and God's understanding is one. Do you see? Now you have man's understanding and God's understanding as one. Typically, the word sense. If you go to Christ, to God's oneness with man, to that sense of Emmanuel, God with us, what kind of an understanding do we have when the Christ is with us? So we have only one consciousness, actually the Christ consciousness. There's only one consciousness, the Christ consciousness. Then, when we go to Christianity, where we have only one universe, what do we get if we have an understanding of the one universe? Then we have only a oneness of understanding and the demonstration of that universe. Understanding and demonstration one. We have then no more an understanding and somewhere a universe to which it is applied. Then our understanding is actually the demonstration of that one universe. And finally, when we get to the 16th chapter, that understanding is just understanding the calculus of being as one calculus. There is nothing else going on but the one. It's the understanding of the one infinite calculus. Oneness as such. Yes. So can you see how we build up a matrix inductively? It's a long drawn process because one has to go out from the whole text of the textbook. And actually, if our spiritual sense would be cultured enough so that it is scientifically spiritual, we wouldn't have to go along this long drawn way of induction. We would be able, so to say, to build up that matrix within 10 minutes or so if our spiritual sense would be structured. Because how would we do it? We now consider quickly the usually how a matrix is being done in other fields of science, that we would do it deductively and say, all right, what is a matrix? We would say a matrix is what? It's about the subject. What is the subject? The oneness of science. All right. And we would have the subject. Now we would have to define our indices, the index I and the index J. And we would have to define for ourselves what kind of an index we introduce here. If it is about the oneness, we certainly have to introduce one index that is on the level of divine science. And so we would put as an index I, we would take those characteristics of divine science, which are in line with the Word, namely man's oneness with God, which are in line with the Christ, namely Christ and man being one through the Christ. We will put in something of divine science that has to do with Christianity. What has to do with Christianity? One universe. Only one universe. And if we take the point of view of science, what do we get there from the point of view of oneness? Just one science, one integral science. Perhaps we'll put it that way. Then we would ask ourselves, what shall we take as an index J? And there, perhaps we would say, oh, really, such a matrix of the oneness of being would only really be of great interest if we could see its relationship to the whole textbook. Therefore, to the textbook matrix. Therefore, the textbook matrix, which has an index, Absolute Christian Science and Christian Science, as you remember. I take it that now for granted what we did 2 years ago. Therefore, I may think, then I build a bridge from the oneness matrix to the textbook matrix by taking as the index J, Absolute Christian Science. And so I may put and say, what is Absolute Christian Science? And that's the word. I may say, well, that's a proposition, the absolute proposition. That absolute proposition as a Christ has an expression, perhaps I would call it expression or exemplification, that would be the Christ, and as an absolute sense, well, I would see that there is one realm of ideas, and I'm at the point of Absolute Christian Science, and I would say in Absolute Christian Science, at the point of science, I would see something about understanding. So actually what we have here is more or less that index, which means what? The index I is divine science. The index J has a touch of Absolute Christian Science, and therefore builds the link to the textbook matrix. And in this way, somehow I can put those two matrices in a relationship so that the two matrices together show the textbook, the whole textbook, from the three different levels, from the level of divine science and absolute Christian science and Christian science. And in this way, we could help to represent the whole teaching of the textbook in all three levels. That would be the result of it. So that what we have here now in the oneness matrix would be the source, the authority from which really the textbook matrix takes its authority, its deductions, and its conclusions. So if we have a good grasp of those two matrices, I think we have a terrific grasp of the whole textbook. That's why I wanted to take this subject for this week, because we have done so much about the textbook matrix over the last few years, and there was always something missing. Somehow, always the student had a sense, and I too had a sense, something was missing, because it left out the higher source, namely divine science. So, if we think along this matrix that we have built up, along the oneness matrix, we really build up our starting point from where to reason. And so, little by little, as we are well aware of the various kinds of oneness, that we have not a simplistic sense of oneness, but a specified sense of oneness, as we are aware more and more of those, we begin to see how they translate themselves to the textbook matrix, and when we did the chapter on prayer, you remember, I took one example. I didn't do it with the other chapters anymore because it would take too much time. I've taken there an example and showed how the law of the oneness sense that we have here can be translated to absolute Christian science and come to quite different qualities of the seven synonymous terms, and if we translate it right down to the human, again we get very different attitudes of the seven synonymous terms. And this is just an example how everything hinges together, and naturally it would culture us in the dimensional consciousness. This is what is necessary. You know, it's very hard, you know, how is the wording you have to learn an old dog a new trick. It's very difficult. We have been educated through 2,500 years in an atomistic way, always to not only in an atomistic way, but always to think only on one level. It's quite amazing. One has always been thinking only on one level. And now a great turn sets in. So to say, a new renaissance is taking place, where the old concept of science of the Greeks and of the Renaissance is questioned and seen to be too limited in order to understand any subject, that quite a new structure of consciousness is necessary, a structure of consciousness that is multidimensional. And only in a multidimensional consciousness things are no more contradictory, things begin to make sense. It is that, to repeat it again, it is that consciousness which is able to detect an identity, though this identity appears in absolutely different forms as phenomena. This is a new consciousness. In the old consciousness, a phenomena could only be identified if it appeared exactly in the same way. When one phenomena was exactly like the other phenomena, we could identify them. With a dimensional consciousness, this is different. With a dimensional consciousness, we can see that certain phenomena are absolutely different, and yet we can see its underlying one identity. That mind as an identity can appear in prayer as the one mind. It also can appear as the all-knowing mind. And it can also appear as the desire to know mind. So that mind becomes knowing, knowing becomes desire. For an ordinary person, mind, knowing, desire are three different identities. For us, they are one identity, but seen from different levels. And this art is an art that has to be cultured and trained within us, and then we can read the textbook. If we don't have that art cultured within us, we cannot read the textbook. Naturally, we read it, but we cannot understand its symphony, where some melodies on top of each other are constantly played, where we can detect that, see that that whole thing is a symphony, is a whole orchestra playing, you know. It isn't so as if we sing, if I sing, if anybody sings, they only can sing one line on one, what you call one, on one plane, huh? One voice. Yeah, whatever that is, yes? Huh? You see, and in this way we try to read the textbook. Whereas it is a whole orchestra where you have to see that though everyone plays a different instrument and different notes, that the playing together gives one impression. So that we can see what it is when within that little, within that one great symphony, somebody on the triangle just make bim, bim, bim. We know this is where its right place value is. And we don't mistake that as a melody and say, oh, what a beautiful melody that is. You see? And make it a linear melody, huh? We place it within all other tones, and still it's one impression. so that the playing together of all the instruments, and everyone playing a different note, is just one identity. And that's what is how we should see the textbook. So that reading the textbook is actually hearing the textbook. You hear, by reading it, you hear the different instruments playing, and you hear the different instruments playing different notes. The violin and the trumpet and whatever there is don't always play the same tone, just on another instrument. They play different tones, and yet it's one great symphony. And that's what we have to hear. We read a paragraph, and reading a paragraph, I hear the overall tone, I hear the secondary tone in it, I hear a third tone in it, I hear a fourth one, perhaps the negative that is resolved. I hear sometimes a little bit of a confirmation, of a reminder, that little triangle that says, tick, 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 reminding you, you know, I had said before this and this, now think of this, and you take it in into the paragraph. Everything is in such a paragraph. And that whole thing together is a marvel. And it shows that no human mind could have written that textbook. It needed, really, a revelation that is above human ability, above human faculty, above human premeditation of a subject, or one couldn't write a textbook. It's really from God. All right. We go home. Thank you.